sex matters, period.
What?
Really?
What?
I'm Judy.
I'm Patricia.
And this is the Sex Matters Podcast. Patricia, a sexual authenticity coach and a Jersey girl turned Minnesotan, and I, Judy, a health educator, advocate, and podcaster, a lifelong Minnesota girl, get together and talk about sex.
Hey, Judy, how you doing?
I'm wonderful. I'm actually pretty wonderful. How are you? I feel guilty for saying that, but I'm pretty good.
Well, I'm okay. I'm just kind of getting over something or getting through something. We don't know what it is, but Judy and I were just talking about all the interesting bits and pieces around COVID-19 and reporting or not reporting, testing, not testing, big business, small business, health departments, all those kind of things. And so just to kind of be light about it, we're going to be talking today about big cocks. So it's kind of interesting that I've really broadened my scope of understanding around how challenged men are with their external genitalia. Mm-hmm. I don't see it as bad as the COVID-19 virus and its transmission and stuff. But, you know, it is an eye-opener when you start looking at some of this stuff and you start realizing some of the real challenges that the opposite sex has on a day-to-day basis that I never even considered.
Well, right. And it's an interesting thing because it's a challenge that's very personal and very personal and big. I hate this word, big. can I'm trying to find the right word now.
Huge monster.
Yes. Well, but that can be that barrier when they're in a situation. And just like things are for women when mm-hmm. they are in an intimate, you know, things that for us can be very concerning and stressful that aren't stressful in a moment to moment basis, but then sexuality comes into play with somebody and then it, you know, some of your insecurities pop up, whether they're needed or not, right? But they're there, they're culturally trained or just experiences that you've had have taught you to have these feelings and these concerns. And so it's very real for sure for these guys. And that's, yeah. The thing, you know, how do we help normalize the playing field so that they're not so, that these things that they're feeling are not interrupting them in their, you know, sexual experiences and sexual exploration, that they're not holding them back.
Right. So in the preparation for this, I put on my harness. I have a leather harness. It's actually a rubber harness. And I have a dildo that I call him Leo, and Leo he's a golden phallus. Okay, so I put on
sparkly
my harness.
Golden?
Yeah, kind of like metallic
swirl.
Yeah, it's real.
I'm sorry. I love the colors and the designs. There's one at Smitten Kitten.
Yeah,
but I just look at it, I'm like, I just love. It's so beautiful.
I think that's where I got mine.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It's so beautiful. Like, this could be a piece of art in your living room. It's just the beautiful color and the way it's designed. And so, yes, I get a kick out of the colors. I don't like all of them and wouldn't necessarily be interested in them because I think some of them, like the bright pink ones and just
kind of distracting.
But I love gold, shiny things. So I...
Well, I wore Leo around for a little while and that would be like a man walking around with an erect penis, I suppose. And I just counted the number of times that it was in my way. Like how many times it banged into something or that I had to make accommodations around this length. And the length of it, I think it's a nine inch dildo, which would be above average according to the standards. They said that the average penis is 5.6 inches. So anything above that, did we say that was erect? Yes, that's erect. Anything above that is considered above average.
Okay.
So, it was just, I counted and I only wore it for like 3 hours and I counted almost to 100. how many times it poked into stuff. Now, I know that guys don't walk around with a hard dick all the time, but that would annoy me.
Yeah, right. For sure. Well, and yeah, and you get to run into stuff and it's just connected to the harness. It isn't like going, the pain is searing through your body.
Yeah. Gosh, I can't even imagine. Not to mention all the times like, it makes a nice handle, you know, like when a guy has an erection or whatever, you can grab them by it and lead them places or, you know, hang a towel, a dish towel on it or, you know, whatever. I get creative when different things like that. But, you know, I guess I have a whole new appreciation for the above average male that has these cock issues, because not only, I mean, we as women, we get objectified for our boobs, we get objectified for our ass, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, men get objectified by their package too. Mm-hmm. And I never really considered that, you know, mm-hmm. how oftentimes we'll look at a man's hands or their feet to try and gauge how big their cock is. Because as women, we're conditioned to think that bigger is better, right? Or that a big penis means great sex. That's how
our culture tells us. I think a lot of women are really, I personally think a lot of women are kind of over that.
You learn it. You learn different.
Right. And I think it's, yeah, I still think that definitely the cultural meme is still out there. And I'm obviously there are women who still, you know, buy into it. Or even if you don't buy into it totally, it becomes a point of humor or, you know.
Yeah.
But I have certainly been in many conversations with women where you might make the joke about size matters, but then the conversation really is back down to it's how you use it that is what really counts. So it's like the joke is there. But guys, if they don't hear that conversation or believe that conversation, they're still experiencing the cultural. And some guys really identify, if you've really identified with your penis and your penis size, the concern about the men who so identify with their penis size that they don't think they have to do anything else, that it is the big cock that matters. This is what I got. I am the man. This is my identity. And then don't actually have to work to care about their partner.
Yeah. That's a big part of it. I totally agree with you there. I think I had that listed in some of my stuff here further down, in that men oftentimes just kind of check out of the whole idea that there's any kind of work or effort that has to be put into sex because they have a big dick. Mm-hmm.
And their dick is not the case.
No, it is not the case.
Sorry, guys, not the case.
And the other thing is that, you know, when people are talking about big dicks, it's actually, the length isn't necessarily the problem. I'm going to put in air quotes. It's more girth. Mm-hmm. Girthy men cause more damage and pain than the real long cock, you know, because the cock can go in and just hit a wall and not be fully satisfied, or, you know, the guy just doesn't get full penetration, balls deep or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's the really thick cocks that can tear a woman up or really cause damage in different positions and stuff. So it makes it, that's what doctors are the most concerned about with, you know, men and their size. If you go to them about, if a man goes to a doctor about their size, they're not going to shorten your dick, but they may do a surgery to make your dick smaller in girth.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yep. That sounds scary.
It does sound scary, doesn't it? It's like shaving off a cucumber. Right. That's what I picture, is just kind of like peeling back the skin and shaving off some with a peeler, just kind of shaving off some of that blood. I don't know that that's what I'm sure that is not what the surgery looks like. That's my imagination running wild.
I am kind of curious about how they do the surgery, because it's like, what exactly are they taking out? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's fascinating. Yeah.
So they'd remove some of the tissue that's around there that engorges. That so they just crazy. Do a removal, and then they'd stitch you back up.
Oh, the healing from that just cannot be good.
Yeah, right.
It seems like that would be almost worse than going through sex reassignment surgery and having a penis added. Mm. Or I don't know. Yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
I've seen the process of the surgery where the guy goes from being male to female, and then they that's freaky enough, but this sounds way worse.
I wrote down through doing some research online, I wrote down a list of hurdles, both from male speak and woman speak, around big dicks. And I just think that's something that needs to be discussed, because here's the first, the biggest thing is that oftentimes when we first engage in sex, we don't even know what an average cock size is. Mm-hmm. Like, because sex isn't talked about, it's one of those things where, you know, you're caught up in the moment, you're going to lose your virginity or whatever, or it's the first time you're sucking a dick or whatever else, and you're all about what's in front of you, what's happening. It's not really about gauging the size and all that kind of stuff. But then after the fact, your first experience is often what you compare all experiences to after. Mm-hmm. Because it's a mental impression. Mm-hmm. So if you're with a really big guy the first time you have sex, and you don't realize that his size may be gargantuan, or he might have a monster cock at 11 inches or something, that most men do not have cocks that size, and you would consider anybody else small.
Right.
When the average perfect size is 5 to 6 inches, according to most women.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Well, then that's the interesting thing too, when we talk about preferred size and when we talk about average size, because if the average size is sort of the average of all of guys, mm-hmm. you know, that doesn't necessarily make average preferred. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, well, right. And again, as we talked about in the last episode, but I think it's worth reiterating, every penis inside you, a female, a vagina, is going mm-hmm. to feel different than the one before. Like, they don't all feel the same. Even if they're the same length, mm-hmm. they're going to have different aspects about them. Like you say, whether it's girth, whether it curves a little bit, whether it hits you in a particular spot.
Yeah.
So it's you know, it's not just a length thing. We're way caught up in that in the way we talk about sex. That it's way more complex than that. And for women, I mean, some women are like, oh my God, you see the guy, you're like, I don't ever want that thing inside
me. They
will
run the other way. Yeah. It's a problem for them. I have it listed in some of my notes here. Girth is probably, again, more of an issue than the length, because mm-hmm. especially if it's your first time, I mean, if you have a small mouth, like I have a small mouth and I can stretch it pretty wide, and I know where the great spots to lick, suck, whatever on a cock are. And I always use my hands where I can or mm-hmm. whatever. You know, if you have a really big dick and you have to use two hands and your mouth, it's like patting your stomach, patting your head, and chewing gum at the same time. It really gets to be quite the show. I could imagine just recording it and being like, oh my gosh, there she goes with that move. Oh my gosh, she's switching hands. Oh, now she's patting her head. Now she's, you know, it seems comical to me. But when you have somebody with a really thick cock, mm-hmm. That can do some serious damage to someone. And if it's the first time a woman's been with somebody and they're with this person with a large cock in girth, and it tears them up, they could associate pain with sex for the rest of their life.
Yes, absolutely.
So that's really, really, that's terrible.
That is one of the things that I think porn doesn't teach guys, school doesn't teach guys, is preparation. You know, if you're having sex with somebody, because the attitude that the guys that I hear about and see them having is, you know, I'm going to ram you with my big dick kind of thing. And it's like, yeah, that's no, that's not an intriguing thing unless you know how to get there well, right? Like, if you know how to do the buildup, that's scary, and or can be.
And, you know, part of the reason that on porn, the big dicks are most of what you see is because they film well. Mm-hmm. You're able to see the insertion and, you know, and the pulling out very clearly because there's a gap between bodies for a camera. Mm-hmm. You know, that is the reason that big cocks are in porn. You know, it's like, it's for the shot.
Right.
It's so they can see. It just allows that extra room there. So, and like you're saying, it requires lots and lots of lube and lots of foreplay. And a lot of guys just are not into doing the work. Mm-hmm. They just want to go at it. And they don't realize that by doing that, it can make it very, very painful. And then that person isn't going to want to have sex with you again. Right. So you end up having the denial of sexual encounters from somebody you might really like or might really be turned on by because you don't take the extra time to make sure that they're comfortable.
Right. All right. And I think that's probably when I think of some of the marriages and the, you know, the women who are especially an older generation who couldn't talk about things and where they talk about sex very negatively. Mm-hmm. I almost wonder, you know, I mean, there's a billion reasons, but how many of them are based in that? Yeah, they've never had the opportunity to have sex where they were considered about their enjoyment, and it's painful. Mm-hmm. All the time, every time, and it's just something to get through.
So let's think about it, though, that this is a statistic almost, you know, where men with the larger than average penis, we think that they're having all the sex, but in reality, they're actually probably having less sex. Mm. And when I talk to my friends who are sex workers, like mm-hmm. They're women who are escorts and stuff, mm-hmm. they're shocked at the number of men who come to see them with large penises because their partners can't take it.
Mm-hmm.
So isn't that fascinating?
It is, and it doesn't totally surprise me. I guess of men that I know, have known over my life with larger penises, they have usually had a relationship in the past where their girlfriend wasn't able to take them all, or it mm-hmm. was painful, or we haven't had a lot of, I think sometimes resources, you know, to say, how do you deal with this? How do you get through it? And especially if you've got, you know, if you are with somebody who has a very large penis, you know, first of all, it's checking in with each other. Does he enjoy a blowjob or something else as much as penetrative sex?
Right.
You know, can you do that? I mean, again, it's that breaking the tie we have with the ultimate sex act is penis-vagina sex. Because for some people, it's just not that big of a deal. Mm-hmm. And if he doesn't need it, and you are happy to give him a blowjob, but you can't communicate with that with each other and try to problem solve, you don't get through it and go, okay, wait a minute, we can be both much happier, and this doesn't have to be a fear thing. I mean, for women, this can be a fear thing, you know.
Yes.
If every single time, you know, if for the people who are really tied to penis vagina sex, you know, if every time if you're a guy, just to think about it from that perspective, every time you had sex, you had to get penetrated in the ass. How often would you have sex or want to have sex? Because it's a different kind of, it can be a different kind of work, right?
Yeah.
Like from what I've heard from gay guys, you know, that's not always the thing that wants to happen, you want to happen, or you're not really wanting that right now, or you're not ready for it. And, you know, granted with guys, there's, you know, I mean, there's lube just like there is with women. Mm-hmm. If you're having anal sex, but I'm, you know, just from that perspective of trying to, what is the analog we can use for men to have them understand? Because there are a good share of men who you know, and women, because again, we've been trained this way, that is what sex is. I mean, what do we talk about when we lose our virginity? What is the thing? It's the act of penis vagina sex.
Yeah.
Yep. So what else would we think, right? And that's what our culture is trying to break apart and say there's a lot of different ways to do this. So for guys with big yeah, with big penises. That's it's a very interesting thing to think of the sex workers and what they run. I mean, that's a fascinating conversation. And how do they try to, in a sense, help the guys? Or
and it's interesting because it's just that it goes back to that saying, you know, one person's trash is another person's treasure. Mm-hmm. You know, if you can't figure out or won't figure out a way to please your man with, because he has a big dick, does not mean that he's not going to find a way. Doesn't mean that somebody else can't do it for him.
Right.
He might have to go pay for it, but you know, he has a right to have, to be wanted for his cock too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about all that. I feel like that's a little, I know that for women, we don't necessarily have the outlet that men do to go to escorts. There are male escorts that you can go hire and have sex with if you want to, but women in general don't do that as much as men do. But
and how much of that is a cultural thing?
Yeah, right?
Like right. How much of, and I mean, and I think there's, I think it's more to it than cultural acceptability, mm-hmm. too. Because I do think there is a lot of times just a different attitude, but I'm not sure how much of that comes from cultural and how much of that comes from, yeah, what we have been trained to think. I mean, so many women, it's like you're not, if you were to admit that you went to a male escort, oh my God, you know, I think that just like would not be necessarily, I mean, I know I've had multiple conversations of people saying, well, you know, look, we have how many female escorts and how many male escorts? And it's like, how much of it is that there isn't a demand because there just isn't a demand? Because I think the demand would honestly look different, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But how much of it is that as women, it's just not even something we can hardly think we could do, and then try to figure out how the heck do we go find that? Yeah. And it feels riskier. It feels really risky as a female to put yourself in the, you know what I mean? I mean, it'd be one thing if it was a regulated business that you could trust, but to trust that situation, men are, I think, a lot more willing to trust that situation just on a physical level, size and ability, than women would be. You're putting yourself at massive risk to take a chance on a male escort, I think.
I would do it. I'd do it in a heartbeat if I was in a position where I had the means I needed and I could pick who I wanted to be with and and not have to be bothered with the day-to-day stuff and just, you know, go about my life. Yeah, fuck yeah, I would. because I don't see it as any different than men going to a woman escort. I mean, you get tested, you get checked, you have needs, you get your needs met, you do what you've got to do, you know, as a woman. You can masturbate too, but it's not the same.
It's not the same. Human interaction. Contact.
Yeah. And I would probably find someone with a big cock, to be honest. if I was going to be just really honest, I would.
That would definitely not be my criteria. But.
Yeah, for me, yeah. So, and I just... Now, I would talk about some more of the drawbacks about a man having a large penis is that the chance of them having anal is probably out the window.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. Some guys that have the smaller cocks or skinnier in girth, their penises are perfect for anal sex. You know, you can just poke it in and poke it out and it's not a big deal, you know, but somebody goes in there with a big ass girthy cock and you're going to be screaming to the rafters and not be able to sit for days, you know, that could be a deterrent for future encounters.
Oh my gosh. Right. Well, exactly. And yeah, ain't enough lube for that. I don't know. You know, the poor guy.
Unless you're really into it. I mean, there's some people who are really into it.
And there are. And there are women who also are. I mean, I've heard women who have said, look, I've had, you know, after childbirth, my vagina just never went back to what it once was. And it's like sex for them feels really different with their partner. So I've heard that too. So it is like the matching up of the, you know, if you
parts,
could find the guy.
The parts, yeah.
So yeah, it's, Yeah.
Now let's talk about oral sex now. Let's see, with a guy with a big cock. We have oral sex. They never actually get their whole cock in your mouth.
Right.
I have a tiny mouth. So like I said, it's, they oftentimes men with big dicks have teethy blowjobs, and I don't, for some people that probably feels good. They need to find a woman that had a really large mouth, like a Whitney Houston or something like that. You know, I often look at the singers who are able to put out those big belt, those big tunes, big songs, and their mouths are just ginormous.
Yeah, like that's interesting.
That's who you need to find, is you need to find somebody who can unhinge their jaw and just go at it, you know. But even so, your mouth is not 9 inches deep or 11 right. inches or whatever.
Right. And you can only shove so much of that.
Right.
So you're going to hit a wall. It's erect.
You're going to hit a wall at one point or another, right? Right. Either in the vagina or in their throat. One of the two, you're going to hit a wall.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that gets tough. And then, you know, kind of bringing this back around to the condom issue, which is what we were focusing mostly on with the micro penises and the small penises. Condoms for big men often don't work. Mm-hmm. This is, they either fall off because the extent or the length of the condom only goes so far, and then it rolls off during sex and it gets left inside or
yeah,
whatever.
Right.
Or they break because they're being stretched too far. So there's, you know, those aspects need to be considered, and they're not comfortable because they're restricting the blood flow. They feel, it feels like a tight rubber band if it's not fit on there correctly.
Right. Right. It's as much as condoms stretch.
Yeah.
While they're stretching, they're still restricting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So the, let's see, the brands that, say that they're made for the bigger guy are, of course, Trojan Magnum XLs. They're designed in a way that they're tighter at the base and they allow more room at the head, so that if you have a bulbous head,
oh, okay,
on a long, yeah. Then there's the Durex Maxim Loves. And then there's the Lifestyle Skins Large, and they're all designed to be wider. So they're designed for a more girthy penis.
Cock.
Yeah.
That's the thing too. They need like length and girth, and
yeah,
how, you know, and how does this work? Because yeah, if it's girthy, but not very long, that's going to suit some guys just fine.
Mm-hmm.
And other people, that's going to, like you say, it's, you're in the thrusting, it's going to end up pulling the condom down and eventually off. And if you're not paying attention to that, I mean, I think there's, it's always a good idea to reach down there and kind of make sure things make are sure. hanging in.
Yep. Absolutely.
They don't,
and so
come on.
It just is, it's one of those things where, because it's difficult for them to find condoms that fit or fit well, that they should be prepared with their protection, because they shouldn't expect you to be able to find exactly what they need. And that's not an excuse to go bareback.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the bigger guys like bareback because they don't want to take the responsibility of having their own shit to you know, to make them comfortable, and a small condom won't fit.
Right. And ladies, no. You don't have to put up with that crap. I'm
That's
sorry.
Right.
That's it is
right.
That is not okay. That is them showing you disrespect if they're thinking it's your responsibility. And, you know, especially if they do need something different and specific, you know, it's, and it, yeah, just in that whole concept, if he's expecting you and you're not the only person he's having sex with, because you're not in a committed relationship, is he doing that to everybody else too? You know?
Right.
And it's a great excuse to say, well, gosh, it just doesn't fit. I'm sorry. Well, okay. Doors closed, babe. Sorry. I mean, it's a perfectly fine thing to do. And if he is not respectful enough to understand that, he can either go to the grocery store or wherever, probably not the grocery store, the the drugstore.
Right.
Or if you got to order them online, then you have them with you. You know, there's one thing to make a mistake, but then you be gracious and say, you know what? I screwed up. I didn't bring what I need. So we're going to have to do something different. And don't pressure her or your male partner. It doesn't matter who. Don't pressure your partner into going bareback, because it's really shows a sign of disrespect and irresponsibility.
Right. And, you know, we all know that I'm a male sympathizer, and, you know, I feel bad for the men who have embarrassment over their, there are some men who are embarrassed by the size of their penis, you know, that when they go to the bathroom, their dick hits the water. I mean, that's an issue. That's a thing, you know, like,
oh, for sure.
I feel for that person. And, you know, the comfort, like I was saying about walking around with my harness on, but what about having, you know, your genitalia on the outside of your body all day? And if it's large, banging into things, or the bulge in the front of the pants, or God forbid, having to buy a swimsuit or whatever. You know, there was a horrifying story when I was a kid at the beach. And there was a man in boxers who was sitting who was in the water next to me, just waiting in the water. And I was there, and my sister was there too, I think. But this guy was sitting next to me, and his boxer shorts, swim shorts, were lifting up, as they kind of do in water. And his cock was there. It looked like an eel coming out from his...
Sure.
And he was not trying to do anything. He, mm-hmm. you know, he wasn't even paying attention to me and my sister, and why I was even looking there, I don't even know. But it was terrifying to me. It was just like, is that what's there? Like, you know, it's just scary. It's a scary thing. As I grew up, obviously, I was probably 10 or 11 when that happened. And I was bothered by it enough that I think I told my mom about it. I don't even remember. I told somebody because I felt really like icky about it. And then I was told to stay away from him. Like he was a pervert. That wasn't the man's, it wasn't him at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but how do you find swimsuits that contain you? How do you find, how do you adjust yourself for picture day at work or what, you know, when everybody has, you wear khakis and you have to like duct tape your junk down so that you don't look like you have a bunch of bananas in your front of your pants.
Yeah. I've always wondered that. What do guys do who have exceptionally long penises? Like,
tape it to their thigh? I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. But it is that curiousness of what do you do with that?
Yeah. It wasn't until my year of exploration that I was able to really see that there's so many different types and so many different sizes and so many different colors and big ones, little ones, thick ones, skinny ones, you know, curved ones, marbled ones, all different kind of stuff, you know, like, and it was amazing to see. It's sort of like the artists who do the vulva pictures now, or the vulva stuff where they like cast different vulvas, or they take pictures of them to show how everybody's different, you know, mm-hmm. and to allow for women to feel more secure in the way their genitalia looks. It's because it's normal. Everybody's looks different, you know. Mm-hmm. With men, if they did something like that, it would be considered pornographic, I think. So
my friend gave me a book, and I think I still have it, but I don't think I have it on my bookshelves in out of storage, the Book of Penises. And part of it was pages of like thumbnail type size of all different shapes, sizes, lengths, everything of non-erect penises. And I actually thought that was really cool.
Did that take the scariness out of it?
Well, it just was so, it was like, how cool is this to have, it's not in a magazine. It's not, you know what I mean? It was a book, and I don't remember, it was pictures and it was words. So it was about penises as well.
Yeah.
So it had a bunch of different factoids in it, but it was a cool little thing. And I'm like, you know, this right here, this should be in like schools. Schools should be able to see this because again, you as a guy, you get to see all different sizes. And again, you know, now with porn being so accessible, if that's what you're learning and comparing yourself to, you know, I know I had a partner at one point, and I just remember him being apologetic and you know, kind of like, yeah, you know, some guys are growers and not showers. And And I was just so, I'm like, I don't know what words to say to you right now, but so not an issue. And it was a very good physical fit for me as well. So it was like, don't want anything different. This is just fine. You know, this is perfect. But how do you say that to somebody? Because it's like, no, I'm really not placating you right now. I'm really, really, like, really happy with this. This is perfect. It's just, it's delightful. Just be okay. You're fine. And how do you convey that message? How do you say, no, 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 really? I'm like so happy right now. All is well, you know?
Yeah.
And take that discomfort out, because I'm like, oh my God, you've no reason to be feeling uncomfortable with yourself, like, at all.
It's unfortunate that, I guess, on both sides of the coin, that male and female, that we're taught to be shameful about stuff. And yet, we're taught to be shameful at young ages, but then as we grow into our teenage years, that's where the split kind of happens. Like 10, 11, 12 is where boys become men and women become virgins. You know, that's
an interesting.
Yeah. And men and the boys are taught that part of their identity is around their cock, and the women are taught to shun anything that they want sexually. Mm-hmm. So I find that very fascinating. And I just, you know, trying to break away some of the mystery behind all of it. There are many fetishes around cocks and cock size and cock color. This probably, you know, we can talk about this in a different place, but there are actual entire fetishes around big black cocks. It's called BBC. Mm-hmm. That's what it's referred to as, BBC, and that there's the myth, or maybe not the myth, of that African Americans have larger penises than Caucasians, and that, so there's all these different racial things that kind of play into things as well, and mm-hmm. then they're fetishized, mm-hmm. which makes it very interesting on a psychological place. So yeah. That's just fascinating to me as well. But I do have to say, the biggest cock I ever saw, I called it Goliath, and it was attached to an African American man. Yes. So he holds the record for me, but it was a monster, and just you know, it was what it was. It's right. It's just a cock like every other cock, and just does the same things, and it doesn't have a bigger load, has the same amount of cum that comes out, you know, same, they make silly faces when they come. I mean, like, it's the same thing. It's just different size, different package, you know.
Right.
So I don't know. It's kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly wish I wish for all of us that the shame could be, you know, on a sexual level, could just be taken away, because I think that stops pleasure. I think it stops so many people from being able to just sink into having pleasure. I mean, think about when you're having sex with somebody who makes you feel that you are all that in a bag of chips, right? Yeah. Versus somebody who has already expressed concern about something or has commented on somebody else that you kind of feel like, well, what are you thinking about me? You don't get to be in the moment. You're often kind of just stuck in that mind space and worried, right? And I think a lot of people, if we could all just sit in offices, in therapists' offices, in coaches' offices, in wherever could be a safe place, and be able to really throw those things out or write them down or whatever, to learn for ourselves, not, you know, yes, the communication with our partner, also important. And how do we heal those wounds, or how do we backstep? Because mm-hmm. I don't think, you know, I've heard men say, you know, somebody commenting on their size makes them uncomfortable, and then kind of holds that place of concern sometimes that makes them maybe not be always comfortable. And women have the same thing. You know, when you've been made fun of by your partner because of your age or some aspect of your body or whatever, you know, and then you're supposed to be intimate and all in with them. It is, I mean, it's an everybody thing. You know, again, I think we're getting better at getting out of that and being more mindful. but it's still a process of you know, it's
self-awareness, right?
Yeah.
And I think like the thing between both of these podcasts that we've done on the small penises now and the large penises is technically when you're talking about the shame or fear behind all of this, it's a fear of not being enough. Mm-hmm. Even when you have a giant cock, the fear is that you're not enough to this person, that you're not good enough, or that you're, you know, just because you have a big cock that you're lacking in some other way. You know, so not being enough is a very, very common fear amongst people that are having issues with sexuality. Mm-hmm. And it's something that can be worked through by, you know, working with a coach or working through with a sex therapist or something like that. Oftentimes it trickles into other parts of your life as well, because how you show up in one area of your life is often how you show up in other areas of your life as well. So, you know, reaching out to someone like myself, who is a sexual authenticity coach, if you take away the sexual part and you look at an authenticity coach, it's really just about being comfortable with who you are, so that you can then have your, you know, be your cake and eat it too out in the world throughout your life. So sexuality is just one area where we tap into as a key. It's sort of like putting the key in the keyhole and then unlocking all the other aspects of where your authenticity can step forward into the light and make you have a more fulfilled life.
Right. And like you said, it's that self-awareness, because I think a lot of us walk around, there's so many things we don't fully realize, or we kind of know there's something there, but we don't know where it stems from or what it's really, how much of a hold it really has on us.
Right, right. And, you know, I'll just say for some people, again, it's fitness. For some people, it's their finances. For some people, it's their career, whatever it is that their driver is. But for a lot of people, sexuality has been pushed to the very bottom of the totem pole and has not been made a priority in their life. And for whatever reason, it's never considered to be important enough to make it a top priority in their life. And it could be the key to happiness throughout your life, just by looking at that one area and how it's affecting everything else. Right. So, you know, just being in denial of it or putting it to the side or placing it on the shelf doesn't make it go away. You still need to be aware of your sexuality.
Right. I talked to a woman when I was at a conference that I'm hoping to have on one of our podcasts, one of my podcasts. And she had said for her, once she started to be able to accept herself sexually and really come to that place of understanding in herself and all of the things she'd grown up with, she was able to dump her eating disorder.
Nice.
And she said, I had no idea how much those two things were tied.
All linked together.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yes. And how many of us are dealing with exactly those types of things. I mean, again, we've talked about on this podcast, when you're in a good place sexually, you've got a good partner, you feel confident about yourself, you feel confident about all of that. Mm-hmm. You show up in the world, it's this huge place of power and confidence and, you know, good sex. Think of how long having really good sex can hang in your existence for, right. You know, you can just feel amazing. And if we can figure out how to do that more often, it needs to be a part of our, it needs to be a part of our checks and balances in our.
Well, when I say forefront, I guess I'm saying on project status, you know, sort of like along the lines of an old Dr. Phil would say, you know, is it on project status? Is it something you're willing to work at versus just putting it at the bottom of the list? Oh, and then never getting to it.
Right.
You know,
right.
So just bringing it to light that this is an area that you consciously want to work at, your right. sexuality, your sensuality, your intimacy with your partner, whatever that is. If that's the project status, that's bringing it to the forefront.
I like that. Yeah. No, I think that's the times that I have heard women say, oh, it's, you know, it's just sex. It's not. It's just something I have to deal with or whatever. And mm-hmm. it's like, ah, no, yeah. You know, and again, I think of how generations shift and change, mm-hmm. you know, and again, I think we're clearly, there's a lot of good things happening of being able to talk about sex and people being able to be open about stuff. And I think that we're, you know, we're gaining some ground. I think there's plus and minuses that are happening with all of that too, right? I think there's in some ways more people are being out and having sex differently than generations have before them, but they're not always mindfully there. You know, when I yeah. think of the girls who in college were all having sex when they were drunk and they're like, no, I can't have sex sober. It's like, no, wrong. No, that's too right. far. That's the pendulum swinging too far.
I really would love to get onto college campuses and start talking to women at that point in their life when they're putting education as a part of their resume, part of who they are, part of their, you know, just part of their commitment mm-hmm. to be able to have conversations with them around the topic of sex.
Yes.
While their minds are open and willing to learn or explore mm-hmm. versus after college when they think they know everything and they fall into the social norms of whatever they were supposed to do when they finished college.
Yeah, right.
There's a real delineation there. And it doesn't matter if you're going to college at like my age, 49, or if you're 80 going to college, your mind is then open. Mm-hmm. If you're going to school to learn, you need to have an open mind to things because you're going to be taught from different perspectives and different teachers, and you have to listen to what different professors say. You have to do the work, and then you interpret that stuff yourself and figure out what it means to you.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. I was having a conversation with a guy who is in his, I think, early 20s. I know it's early 20s. I'm not sure how early. And we were talking about how, you know, how conversations are changing and kind of a little bit about how his generation sees sex and sexuality. And I was talking about exactly that of it would be fun to have more situations where people more sexually experienced could talk to younger people. And he was saying it would be good to hear that from like women and who are like, you know, in their late 20s, because you don't want to make them, I don't remember exactly how he said this, but he's like, you don't want them to be too old, because if they're too old, in some ways people might not listen. And I was thinking about that after we had the discussion. I'm thinking, actually, I want to change the thinking on that, because I really think that actually when somebody is in their early 40s, say, and it depends, everybody's life path's a little different, right? But I think yeah. there is something to be said for women who are in their 40s, and also what life path have you walked down, to have those discussions, because you have walked through an even greater life path to kind of take some of those things. I mean, I wish that I had, you know, if I could have the conversation with my 20-year-old self from now, even versus when I was 30, it's a very different conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would lead to a very different path if I could have those conversations and just process through some of that stuff. So I think it'd be fun to have like a panel of people who are of kind of varying ages and just go have a conversation, because I think there's a lot to be gained by that. I know when I was when I was a student teacher in one of my classes, which was kind of for counseling and coaching type mm-hmm. things, and we would get in discussions about sex and sexuality, and I don't remember one time we got talking about women's cycles and periods, and we had like one or two guys in this class, everybody else was women, and the guy was like, so should I like leave right now? And I like looked at the guy and put him, said, no, you shouldn't, you should stay right here, because if the guys that I went out with could have this conversation and could hear this information, they would respond very differently. And so you are sitting in a place of advantage right now. So no, you should not leave the room. This is a conversation you need to hear and understand. And yeah. I think there's a lot. Yeah. I think those are so important. And I'm grateful that in the path that I took in college, and I went later in life, I am so glad I took the classes that I took. And, you know, we had these discussions, open discussions, yeah. and man, some students were not comfortable with that. This was an inappropriate place to be talking about this stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, this is such an important place to be talking about this stuff.
Right.
You know, where else are you going to get to talk about this? And I had some professors who were very open and very much would help the culture of the class just really open up. And that is worth so much right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I am glad that we talked about both ends of the penis size spectrum.
Yeah. I think it's messages that both
men and
plus
women.
Everybody need to hear.
Right. Both plus everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I want, you're right. I want guys to be more comfortable and women to be more comfortable with being able to handle whatever they sort of have in front of them.
And, you know. Don't be scared.
Yeah.
Don't be scared. Just do your best with what you got.
Right.
And men, you don't have to prove anything to anybody. If you can't get his whole cock down your throat, then, you know, you can't. It's not a big deal. Don't let it make you feel bad. Don't make it make you feel less than.
Right.
You do the best with what you can, and chances are it's not the first time it's happened.
Right. And if it is, you know, for guys to be
gracious.
Yeah. And understand that maybe it's a process, you know, mm-hmm. just because sex didn't work out the way you either wanted it to or you would like it to, doesn't mean you can't give it some time and some figuring each other out and figure out how do we do this? How do we please each other?
That's right.
You know?
That's right. Yep. Because sex matters, period.
Sex
right?
matters, period. Yes. Yep. Before we go, talk about where do we find you and where do we find me?
Okay. Well, if you'd like to read my first book, Crossing the River Called Suffering, it's available on Amazon. And Judy puts a link on the website for sexmatterspodcast.com. And we get a little bit of a kickback from that. So if you buy the book through the sexmatterspodcast.com website, that helps support the podcast. You can always hear me here. I'm also available on Facebook under my name, Patricia Engelking, or The Power Exchange. And what am I missing? What else do I do? I
haven't. Not out yet.
My book's not out yet. But
do you have any classes on your website right now?
I do not. Everything's kind of closed down, and I am not ready. When I get healthier, then I'll make the plans. I don't want to have to change things in the middle. So,
no, that makes sense.
It might be next weekend that I hold a webinar or something like that. So, people that are listening, if you just tune into me on Facebook, I'll put up alerts or whatever that something's coming, or you can catch me in my tub randomly talking about life. So
they're great conversations too. Your tub talks are
my tub time with Patricia. Yeah. whatever's on my mind, I go in my tub and I like seep into knowledge or wisdom or something. And, it all kind of just comes out. So sometimes it's sexy, sometimes it's not, but,
sometimes it's just life shit you're talking about.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just really good stuff. So I just need to get it off my chest anyway. And then we find you through
wellnessrenpodcast.com. And you can, reach me there. Check out the podcast episodes. Right now we're dealing with some COVID-19 stuff, but the podcast really is all over the board, and there's like 120 some episodes. So if you don't find what you're looking for, go ahead and scroll through. But things are more on the holistic side of things. Mm-hmm. My podcast is really born out of me having my own challenging health journey and not finding what I need in the doctor's office, and wanting people to be empowered to find other modalities. But you know, it's not just modalities. It's also everything from talking to a sexual authenticity coach and a brain coach and just other conversations. And it's our personal health and wellness. It's our community health and wellness, but it's how do we have our best life and get through some stuff. So
yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. And of course, if you are listening to this and you want to support the Sex Matters podcast on Patreon, you can find that at the sexmatterspodcast.com website. And please consider doing so, especially now with all of the challenges with work. I know many people are challenged themselves, but if you have the ability to support the work we're doing, this would be a wonderful time to hop on board.
Yeah, and you can, if you're on the site, you can send comments and questions. We love comments and questions from the audience. So
please send questions. Oh my God, that's so much fun when people send questions. I love that.
Yeah, yes. We have a whole list of topics that we're going to talk on, but we'd love to answer a question or two now and then.
Yeah. We had a good run there for a while. We need some folks hopping on and that's fun.
Yep. So awesome. All right. Well. Until the next time.
Yes. All right. Thank you. Thank you all for listening. We'll see you later.
Bye.
Bye.